Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast, the greatest, most entertaining lacrosse podcast in all the galaxies. All about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, a two-time captain there, and is currently the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. Coach, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, man.
It's good to be back.
I got off the golf course with you today. You know how it's going.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Well, that's just the nature of golf.
Yeah, no, I know.
Golf is just that way.
Yeah. Well, if you'd asked me before, last couple times, I was silly. I was playing really well. So for playing well for me. But no, everything's good, man. Happy to be back. You were at the beach in a hurricane, right? And I feel like I was trying to think before we hopped on, when's the last time that we talked lacrosse? And it was, you know, we had Mike Rabel on just as the PLL was kind of starting up, and then
it did not disappoint.
But you started to take a vacation right in the middle of our of our Super Bowl.
Dude, I was bringing my computer to the beach, so
really?
People were looking at me, and I felt kind of strange. But we had this whole tent set up and everything. But I would just bring my backpack, and I'd bring all these chargers, and I just put my laptop on my lap. And I'd pour myself like a Jack and Coke, and I'd just sit there and watch lacrosse on the beach.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
No, I mean, it was two of the greatest couple weeks. I mean, I don't know if it's because we haven't, you know, like, I think it's probably a combination of everything, right? The PLL did a great job with production. The games were sick and talent is sick. But also, too, we've been so sports deprived, you
totally.
Know, both in the lacrosse world and everything else.
We didn't have our college Final Four and all our college tournament.
Yeah, we had nothing. So I was all in. I mean, recording games, watching them during the day. Obviously, I have like a four-week old. So like all he's doing is just sleeping. And so I would just like, I'd like volunteer. I'm like, I'll take the four-week old. You let him lay on my chest for about 2 hours here. I got a game I got to catch up on. And then I'd watch in the dark when my wife's asleep because, you know, it's late games. That was the only bad thing, but.
Well, that was the great part about being on vacation is that they were late and I could just stay up, you know, whatever. If 10:30 their time, whatever, I stay up till 1, didn't matter. So it was just unbelievable. It was awesome. The Whip Snakes, back-to-back champs. You know, it's amazing how they were able to turn it on there in those last few games where it was kind of dicey there for a while, but they're just so stacked. They're so loaded everywhere.
Yeah,
and it wasn't Matt Rambo leading the way. I mean, Matt was unbelievable and led the league in points over the series, but it was Zed Williams who came up huge.
Zedzilla. I think it was Rambo that gave him that nickname. That was a pretty sweet nickname. No, I mean, he was a stud. Obviously, at UVA, he was a beast. I think he ran a little bit more out of the midfield. He did a little bit of both, but he's so strong, man. That was the biggest, my biggest takeaway from him. Like, just has this, like, you know, obviously his stick is great and stick protection, but he would just lean into guys and you know, he had pretty good defenseman, a local kid, Rowlett, who hopefully it would get on next week. I think
he did great all
PLL selection, but that didn't stop him from scoring what, 5 or 6 goals in the championship game. And so how different could it have been, though? I mean, the chaos game, the championship game, obviously the Whip Snakes kind of pulled away and inserted their dominance, and the chaos had a good run, you know, to win 3 in a row or 2 in a row, whatever it was. But I mean, the Whip Snakes could have easily lost in the semifinals.
Totally.
Like, that overtime period was multiple possessions. You know what I mean? Where, and they didn't play very well. And, you know, the Redwoods probably play as good as they could. You know what I mean? So I was kind of, you know, now I'm from Ohio, but I'm still pulling for the Maryland kids. I hope one of my players is playing for the Whipsnakes, you know, one day. And so I was happy to see it. You know,
no, it was awesome. I just loved watching all of it. I mean, I thought so many guys stood out, right? I thought Josh Byrne, I thought he really stood out.
He had
the number, that play went between the legs, number one on SportsCenter.
That was that might be one of the greatest goals. I mean, you've seen a lot of, I've seen guys like try that in practice or,
yeah.
But to do it at that level in that game.
I think in the tournament and didn't make it.
Yeah.
But he actually made it.
Yeah.
And no, wasn't like horsing around. Like it was.
No, I mean,
legit.
I don't know if he was, I was on a lefty goalie, but he put it like low and away. Like it wasn't just like, it was like a muffin at the goalie. It was,
no.
I mean, it was well placed, well thought out. I mean, no, he would, you know, Byrne was sick. Obviously, you know, you got your big names. I think Schreiber obviously was, you know, one of the better players. Blaze Reardon was ridiculous. For as good as Kyle Bernlohr was, maybe it's because he saw more rubber, but like Blaze Reardon in the first half of the game, you could tell that championship game, the Whipsnakes offensive guys were so pissed.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, how the hell do we score on this guy? And I know you get in that funk and you start getting in your head. Just like a goalie in hockey, you see a hot goalie, sometimes it's like, it could be the death of you. So they found a way to kind of punch their ticket in the second half. But no, he was a stud. I mean, Michael Earhart, I mean, he just like looks like a giraffe running down the field. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And then he had a couple of huge two-pointers. I think, was that in a semifinal game? I think it was. I can't even remember.
I think it was. They beat the Redwoods in overtime, and he had two two-pointers. You know,
I think all their games with the Redwoods were really, really tight. But like Ryder Garnsey, I thought he stood out at times, played really, really well. Grant Amick, we talked about him.
Who's that?
Grant Amont. He played amazing, certainly to start the series.
Certainly to start, yeah. Yeah, but you didn't have, I mean, you had guys, I don't know, I think the Whipsnakes, you know, I feel like have so many good players. You could like talk about their whole roster, you know, and the chaos offensively really came on at the end. So it's easy to talk about like those Canadian guys, you know, Byrne, Curtis Dixon was kind of a stud towards the end.
Dane Smith. How about Dane Smith?
Yeah, I know. Trust me. People with an H, though. Yeah. With an H, and he's like 4 inches taller than me. But
bigger underwear.
He's a hell of a box player. So, but the biggest story was Connor Fields not being a part of that, right?
I know.
That was the most intriguing thing.
I got to get that story because, listen, I get it. I remember I texted you. He had a turnover there after the I can't remember which game it was. And then I said, man, that was a bad turnover. Because just it was in overtime, and I know that's his game, but you just got to – I think you got to value the ball a little more in that situation. But, you know, what am I? I'm just a dad. But anyway, they sit him for the next game, and I'm like, whoa. And then they never play him again. And I'm like, man, this is one of the best players in the world. Something's going on here. I don't want to start rumors or anything, but I'm gonna text some guys because I got to find out what's going on. Because you just don't bench a guy of that kind of talent for three straight games.
But it kind of worked.
I mean, it did. It did.
It did. That's the crazy. I mean, who knows? You know, if it didn't work after if they lost the next game, would they put him right back in, or was he on the bench permanently? And no matter what happened, he was not coming off. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't in that locker room, so. Something to be said about, you know, if someone thinks they're above the team, maybe you got to send a message, and then it's easier to send that message when you're winning. You know what I mean? So
does he strike you as that kind of kid? He seems like a pretty soft spoken. I've talked to him one time for 2 minutes. He doesn't strike me as like some arrogant.
No, he,
all
everything
about
I've heard.
Kid.
I mean,
yeah, seems like a great kid.
Seems like a nice kid. And I mean, not that every kid from Albany is like super fun loving and outgoing, but I just feel like that Albany culture kind of breeds that like, just happy-go-lucky. They love the sport. They want to play. I mean, that's the way he plays. It's probably why, you know, he plays so free, because he got that permission from Scott Maher at Albany, and it's been super successful, you know, in the field game. I mean, I remember last season in the PLL, he was, you know, one of the best players in the world, you know, every single time. So I don't know. But as a coach, it was kind of cool. You know, you have the luxury of like, it's like next man up kind of mentality, and it doesn't hurt when your next man up is Miles Thompson. You know what I mean? But it still resonates the same message that no one's bigger than the team. And you heard Matt Rambo talk about that. Like, he just wants to keep hitting singles. I love that. Like, I love that. Like, every time he'd get on the mic, he said, I want to keep hitting singles, and he didn't care if he scored. And
I know. I mean, Matt Rambo led the league in points, and he only had 7 goals.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's kind of shifted that he led the league. It's because he had that eight assists in one game.
Well, still.
I mean, it does hurt. I mean, it's a good game. But, I mean, it wasn't just totally spread out. But either way, I mean, he's, you know, phenomenal player. And No, I love their offense. Jay Carlson was like a stud, you know. That's like the perfect type of, you had a lefty, strong lefty, a strong righty, and then an off-ball guy.
Right.
That's what you need, and they did a great job. So now what the hell do we do with ourselves?
I don't know, man. They got to do it again. They just got to run it back. Now, it's a problem is a lot of these guys, you know, like Ty Warner's in like med school now, and
yeah.
guys have like real jobs too.
Right.
You know, yeah, because, yeah. you know, the PLL is giving these guys salaries and insurance, but some of these guys want to actually make a ton of money. You know, they want to yeah. real, you know, make real money.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, we got Joe Nardello coming up with a EB exclusive here for the interview later, and you know, before he got on, he's studying for his real estate license, right?
Right, right, yeah.
So
yeah, guys are doing 100 things, and it's hard to take off to you know and set aside basically three and a half weeks, you know, when you consider the quarantine and everything. But yeah, I mean, is there a way we could do this again? You and I were talking about it. I mean, could they do it in the winter? Could they do it? Maybe they do it after the regular season?
I think the winter. I think they could do the winter and like do it in IMG and do it over the holidays.
Does that conflict with the NLL? When does the NLL start?
It does. It does. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
And how many of these guys? Probably a lot of these guys.
Most of the stars, you know, are crossover guys. Rambo, Matt Dunn. You know, you look at the Chaos's offense, that's most of those guys' world is the NLL, and now they're just happy to play in the PLL. So, and the NLL pays well and stuff like that. So I don't think they would do that. I saw someone on Twitter, I think it was maybe Dave Cottle, like proposed like a PLL versus
MLL
tournament at some point. So who knows? I mean, but the viewership was good, right? And that's
the numbers were.
I know. I mean, like. I was telling you, I hope it continues to grow. I think it will. Maybe they got some new net sport fans. If that's, I can't remember what Mike Rabel said as far as.
So here are the numbers I do have in front of me. So they tweeted 340,000 viewers on NBC for the championship game. That's up 23% from last year's championship. So that's great. You know, up a quarter.
Right.
And then overall, their viewership was up 33% from 2019. And you'd expect it to be up, you know, especially in the middle of all this pandemic and everything. But I think it shows growth. Each game on NBC/NBC Sports, you know, the cable network, did about 153,000 viewers. So I know they killed it also on social media. They get a ton of impressions there. They do a great job with all of that. I mean, there's no question that the PLL was shining and owning the lacrosse world for 16 days. No doubt about it. So I don't know. I'd love to see a winter thing. Maybe they can find a window of opportunity. If not, why not? And we talk about it a little bit with Nardella in the next segment, but why not have a deal where maybe you play 8 regular season games and then you have the tournament, right? So you have your regular season champion and then you have your playoffs.
Yeah.
Whatever, you're right. You have two. It's just like you do in the MAC in high school, right?
I agree. I mean, what did they do the year before? I couldn't even remember. Was it? Oh, I guess it was. It was like the top 4 teams made it, and then the other teams played for like draft picks.
Yeah,
like for draft picks.
But I just the idea of all so many games. You know, 16 games in 20 days or whatever.
Well, the idea of pool play is cool because it's like, you know, not necessarily you might not face everybody and before you go into the playoffs and it helps your seeding and
right.
So who knows, maybe you do pool play and then you do a double elimination tournament or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I really liked it.
Yeah. No, it was awesome. It was awesome. And now I'm just back in my depression without lacrosse for the next, you know,
right.
6.5 months. So who knows, you know, schools are not opening, but hopefully lacrosse stuff will still continue at the club level.
Still be able to do like fall league stuff, right?
Yeah. I think there'll be some fall leagues, and the high school players will be able to, I'm sure, participate. Maybe not under their own high school umbrella, but certainly there'll be teams entering that league that happen to be full of a lot of high school players. So, So we'll see. Look forward to that. And August is usually the time to decompress if you're a lacrosse coach. Every lacrosse coach always gets married in August because it's like typically the one time where not a whole lot goes on. So next couple of weeks will be a little bit dead. And then 2022, start getting phone calls on September 1st. And 21s still can't get recruited, you know, can't visit campus. So we'll see how things shake out here over the next couple months.
So brutal.
Brutal.
All right. Well, we're lucky today. We actually did this yesterday. We recorded our interview with Joe Nardella, the face-off wizard for the Whip Snakes.
Face-off man of the year.
He won 100 draws, right? 72% clip. Really wasn't even close. best face-off guy in the whole championship series. So we have him on, but we had a difficulty with Coach's internet. It was going in and out. So we tried to start it with Coach, and then, I be honest with you, Coach, I just edited you out.
I know. It was brutal. It was brutal. I don't know if you guys, you're sponsored by Xfinity, right?
Sure.
You got to talk to those people. I had an outage for about 24 hours. Hey man, but
natural disasters, those kind of things happen. Ian.
No, I know. There was storms or whatever. So I don't have a big silly house like you. So you did a great job. I was able to listen in. It was funny. I was able to listen in but not participate. I actually thought about submitting some questions in the chat.
You should have sent me some.
I should have.
But it went like, really well.
Yeah, no, you did a great job, and it's
he's
I thought
a
he
good
killed
guy.
It.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, and we kind of get his perspective on how the whole I keep getting it confused. It was 20 games in 16 days, right? Something like that.
I think that sounds right. I'm going to go with that.
And I think they played – how many did they play? Did they play 9 games, 6 games, whatever they did? They played more than everybody else.
Yeah.
And so those guys were worn out, but they brought it back-to-back, the Whip Snakes. So
he even shows you his ring at the end.
Yeah,
too bad we don't.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's an audio thing, but we were over Zoom, so I got to look at it. But anyway, when we come back, it's just Joe and I because Coach's internet's poopy.
I'll be back next week.
Coach will be back next week. But please enjoy Joe Nardella when we come back. Don't go anywhere. All right, guys, it's our pleasure to introduce our guest today, one of the best, if not the best, face-off guy in the world. He was an academic and third-team All-American at Rutgers. He was first-team All-Big Ten, Big Ten Specialist of the Year, two-time All-Big East selection. He's the founder of the Face-Off Factory, and he's a back-to-back PLL champion after leading the league in face-off percentage, winning 100 of 138 draws. That's a 72% clip. He picked up 65 ground balls, and he threw in 6 points to boot, 3 goals and 3 dimes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Time and Room, Joe Nardella. Joe!
Huge introduction. Fired up to be here. That just gave me a little extra juice. I'm excited to talk shop with you guys today, and thanks for having me.
How crazy have the last 3 weeks been for you? 20 games in 16 days. You guys played 6 pro lacrosse games in 16 days. I don't even know what your body felt like. Only thing I could relate it to was like playing like in a men's soccer league and playing in a tournament on a weekend, and by the 3rd game, you're dead. I'm imagining you guys were feeling that same way.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, in part with the 6 games, we did have 7 practices over the course of 4 days to start it off. So it was pretty tough, especially getting acclimated to the elevation. But I think following that round of 3 games in 4 days, when we got the bye, we had some time to rest up, and Coach Staggs did a great job just managing the workload for us. So we felt pretty good in both of the games, which is huge and a big part of our success. But yeah, it was definitely a grind, man, especially taking a lot of high level draws against great competition, taking checks from those wing guys on other teams. I got beat up a little bit, but that's part of the grind.
All right. So let's get into, first of all, sort of your preparation for all this. How did you handle sort of leading up, the months leading up to it? Were you working out? Were you doing your own thing with a trainer? I know you have the Face-Off Factory. And then when did you start locking down and quarantining? And did you do any tests before? Like, how was all of this before you left?
It was pretty intense. So I had actually trained pretty hard from box season on. So I was going after it since like October and felt pretty good about myself when they canceled the box season early March, just to build up into PLL. And working with my strength coach, I got into a pretty good program. And we were actually able to do stuff in person in Massachusetts with distancing rules. So I was in the gym 4 days a week, taking face-offs probably another 3 or 4 days a week outside of that for like an hour to 2 hours a clip. And then, you know, I wasn't really coaching aside from virtual stuff. I did a little bit in New Hampshire, a little bit in Massachusetts in person. But as soon as July 1st hit, I had gotten back from doing 2 clinics that were canceled because of COVID in Pittsburgh and Wisconsin. So I did get tested then. I was good to go because I had worn a mask the whole time and been pretty smart about it. And then I just went back to upstate New York and kind of quarantined from that point forward. And we have a gym at my house. I grew up in a wrestling household, so we have quite the extent of tools and stuff to get me ready. And I just, you know, pushed it to that next level. And leading up to the tournament, came back to Boston the day before our bus, which took us to the charter flight, and then it was off to Utah for 3 weeks.
So you were never nervous, like, oh my God, I hope I don't like get a false positive, or I hope I don't get some sort of weird like asymptomatic thing going that I picked up at McDonald's or something? You know, did that ever, that would have scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, and I think you saw it with guys like Tucker Durkin where he didn't see any symptoms, but he ended up testing positive. And I felt pretty confident about being tested before I went back home. And then in upstate New York, things are pretty mellow. There's not a ton of cases. And, you know, there's not as many people as living in a city like I do in Boston. So it was fairly easy to stay distant from most people. And I felt pretty good about it.
Right. It seemed like the tournament was amazing, by the way. And we've had Paul on, and we've had Mike Rabel on, and a bunch of the guys. And as it was, you know, coming, you know, we all saw last year how great a job NBC did producing this. And the fact that you still had no fans, but you were able to still put on such an entertaining product. I mean, I don't know if you actually saw any of the broadcasts, any of the playbacks, but I mean, it was spectacular. I mean, even the cardboard cutouts, they kind of worked, you know? I know they had a little fake noise in there.
No doubt.
And it just, you know, and the tarps and everything, they just did it right, and it didn't feel like an empty stadium. It was really produced really well.
Yeah.
What did it feel like playing?
Honestly, I think it was a little easier to stay locked in and focused without fans heckling you or the crowd noise. And it was kind of special how competitive it was, just feeling the energy on both sides. It was really raw and really natural, and it was pretty cool. I think, you know, with that, the whole quarantined environment, fanless, I think the broadcast was actually excellent. Like, they did even better than they did last year, and I think that allowed a ton of my peers, family, friends, people we know to really buy in and see what the PLL is all about, especially given the uniqueness of the circumstances right now. So I think it was a huge opportunity that they definitely capitalized on. And it was pretty special to be a part of.
Right. Now, this year, you just dominated, right? Last year, you were one of the finalists, I think, right, for face-off specialist or whatever.
Yeah.
And this year, I mean, for sure, you're going to win it. I mean, you should be. Did Zed win MVP? So he's MVP. But, I mean, you were right there.
Yeah, Zed did win MVP. Yeah.
I mean, you were right there.
But, you know, Zed, he carried us in the final game. We don't win without him. So I think that's a huge credit to his perseverance after getting shut out in the semis. He came back and had his best game on the final day. And so, he definitely deserves it. He's an awesome guy and great teammate.
Well, your roster's loaded, but let's talk about the face-offs though. Were there any rule changes from last year to this year?
No rule changes. No, I think just having the same set of officials throughout the tournament definitely allowed some guys to really get in the groove and other guys probably to struggle a little bit because, you know, the cadences were fairly, I don't want to say they were the same, but they were consistent, right? When you have the same reps, you can start to figure it out as an elite level faceoff guy. And I think having the same guys, some of us really did well with our clamps and other guys did not. But I think, you know, regardless of the clamps and stuff, I think one thing that separated me from the pack was my ability to win back faceoffs. I actually lost the clamp, and that's something
right.
I pride myself on. And my wing guys do a great job of helping me. But when I don't really give up a lot of fast breaks forward, I have the ability to allow my wings to stay connected to those other guys. And as long as I pop up quickly, when I don't get that clamp, we're making the lives of those other three guys on the other side of the line extremely difficult to get possession.
So what coach noticed and I noticed, and you know, I'm not a lacrosse guy. My son plays, but I don't. I just love the game. But it appeared to me that the way they were officiating it, they just, as soon as they touched it, they blew the whistle. And I don't remember seeing that. Now, I think I was talking to you off air and you said in the MLL they did that, but that's typically not how I had seen it in high school or even in college.
Yeah, and I think the pro game, you know, they try to eliminate some of the BS or the guessing or the waiting around. So, you know, even last year, I think the whistles are always sped up compared to college or high school. It's a little bit quicker of cadences. So a lot of us are used to that. But for me, playing indoor where guys are actually watching the refs and you're just waiting for that visual cue of him putting the whistle in his mouth to go, that really translated for me and helped me, right? Because if you're waiting until he has the whistle in there, you're too late. So I had known after that first quarter of the first game, as soon as they're touching him, they're blowing the whistle. So as soon as his hand comes off, you're going. right? And a lot of guys get nervous or don't have faith about stuff like that. And yes, I probably violated maybe a few more times than some other guys, but that's the risk you got to take with fast whistles. And that's something, you know, me and my training partner, Max Adler, practice all the time. We have recordings of super quick ones, medium ones, and slow ones. So we've been on top of that with our training from day one. So I was prepared for it.
All right. So walk me inside. I'm a noob. You're teaching me the art of facing off. What is your checklist of what you're looking at when you get into the circle?
Yeah. So number one, it's being comfortable in your stance and being set up properly so that everything is angled towards the ball. Now
right. In
the PLL, everything starts on your right and the ball is pretty high up in your stick, almost near the shooting strings. So you really need to set your body, feet, hips, and shoulders in that knee down stance up to go almost, if we're looking at a clock and 12 being straightforward, directly at like two. And I think that's number one. Number two is being light on your hands and being ready for whatever the whistle may be and being aware of it, right? So it was faster whistles. So I knew by the time I went down, I had to be ready because as soon as they were saying set, the whistle's coming, right? So really down was my set call and I was getting locked and loaded. And then number three, the biggest thing for me is crushing the ground and getting my pinky to the ball. So I always say down and down the line. You need to slam your top edge of the stick over the ball, but you also need to get it in the throat so you have control if you do win the clamp. So I was just going down and down that line, and that's something I teach all the time, and it worked out pretty well.
What about, you said, though, you were looking to see, I didn't know, I never thought of this, that you typically would look at a ref and see when he puts the whistle in his mouth, like that sort of thing. When are you looking at that?
That's an indoor.
That's an indoor.
Because the ref stands so close, and they say set, and then they put the whistle in their mouth. So if you watch an NLL game, you'll see both guys peeking up at the ref.
Okay, but you can't do that outdoors.
No, if you do it in outdoor, they'll mess with you. They won't blow it right away. You know, a couple guys have tried in the past, and they don't play around with that.
And then what are you looking at your opponent? I mean, obviously you guys are all pros, so there's no huge tells pre, right? You guys aren't like, you don't see like, oh, he's got one grip, and so I know what he's going to, right? You're not giving that away. That's too simple.
Yeah, I mean, you know, stance and grip have advantages and disadvantages. So based on how they hold the stick or how they kind of put pressure down on that right hand, you can tell if they're, you know, trying to be quicker or lock in there. So those are things I definitely pick up on. But most of the scouting is done pregame, right? I usually look at their stance to see if they're set up for a first move or for like a rotation, right? So if they're a little bit more square, I know they're committing to that first move versus being a little more open with their hips. They're probably looking to lock up and work around the ball. Guys who are lighter on their hands are trying to get in and out versus guys who might have a little more pressure trying to lock you up or pinch that ball off the whistle. And then three is just their left hand, because that'll really tell you what move they're actually trying to do most of the time. So those are really the three things I try to pick up on.
Now, you are far and away the best in terms of winning percentage this go around. Connor Farrell was second, you know, and he took a ton of draws. Looked like Jake Withers, from a percentage-wise, was third. Kind of give us your ranking. Who are the toughest guys for you to go against and why?
I think you look at, like, all the guys, and everyone's really good for a reason, right? They're all in the league for a reason. So I can say anybody. For me specifically, I think some of the toughest guys in the PLL would be Drew Simino, who I didn't have to play against. I trained with him back in upstate New York, so he knows my tendencies really well. So that would make him tough. And then I think you can't avoid the obvious. Connor Farrell and Trevor Baptiste are both very good in their own right as well, and those guys have given me trouble in the past also.
Right. All right, so let's talk about what the room dynamic was as the week was unfolding. As you played your first couple games, what was that like? Was the goal to go undefeated, win every damn game, or were you just kind of feeling it out?
No, I mean, honestly, from the get-go, Coach Staggs in our first Zoom meeting as a team was like, we're not focused on winning a championship. Teams who want to repeat don't focus on that if they're going to repeat. You got to just focus on winning each day, winning each moment that we're at practice or the things you can control. And that's always been kind of his MO, is to focus on what we can control and be your best at that. So it started by being our best in training camp, winning that first game, doing the best we could to scout while we had our little break. And get our bodies right for the 3 games in 4 days stretch. And then, you know, win the first game of that stretch, win the back-to-back, rebound quickly and get that first seed against the Archers. And then it just was, you know, one game at a time in the playoffs. And I think it all unfolded pretty well. And he looks like a genius right now because he had a great plan. But I do think him keeping us singularly focused on the day and the tasks at hand was super big and important for us. to making this thing work.
Talk about what it's like playing with Matt Rambo. He just seems like a gregarious, fun guy. Doesn't care about his stats, just wants to win. You know, I was taken by the fact he was willing to just pass all day. If he wasn't going to be able to get a shot off, he would just pass to Zed.
Yeah, and I think you see that when you watch Matt Rambo play. He's one of the most unselfish stars in the entire league, right? And it's no secret why he's been so successful at every level, is because he doesn't care about his own success. He just wants his teammates to be the best they can, and I don't think anyone was happier for Zed than Matt.
Right.
Right? And he all tournament long was getting hit, double teamed. You should have seen his arms. He looked like banana with all the bruises on them, but that's what he does for the team. And, you know, when we kind of had our moments where we struggled, he was one of the first guys to step up and speak up and kind of get everybody back in the right mindset to win games. And I think his leadership, even as a younger guy on our team, is invaluable. And he's also, I had said this to somebody earlier today, he's like the social captain on our team. He just has an infectious, fun personality.
Right.
And people love being around him, whether it was, you know, him and Zed playing Madden and everybody watching and him getting pissed that he lost, or us all playing cards and him saying funny stuff. Like, he's the best.
Now, you guys were up most of the time, but when you were down, just even a little bit, like, does Rambo's mentality change? Or is he the same guy? Like, what's he like in the huddle?
He gets more pissed off, honestly. He's like, I'm more tenacious, more demanding of us to make the winning plays. And I think that's what you need. And that shows his ultimate compete level. And guys like him, Jake Bernhardt, Mike Earhart, and John Haas, our captains, like, they also, you know, gave us a kick in the ass when things weren't going well, both in game one against the Redwoods, game two against the Redwoods, and that final. And those are the three games where we're really, really tested.
What was it like adding Zed? I mean, obviously he had a huge tournament and we all knew of him in college. But, you know, you guys had won the championship before. It's probably awkward. You first probably meet him over a Zoom call or something, right? Like, what is that whole dynamic like? And then he ends up leading the league in goals.
I mean, he's such an easy guy to get along with. Same with all our new additions, like Brad Smith, TJ Camizio. All those guys played it was such a smooth transition. They played such a big role for our team.
Right.
But I think, you know, from day one at training camp where we started competing, everyone's like, holy shit, this kid can play, you know, which makes it a lot easier to fit in when you're going to make a big impact on game day.
Right. Did you have any idea that he was that good?
I mean, I had played him in high school, so I had known Zed was great for a long time, right? And then we played against each other in college, and I, you know, coached college, so I was always watching games, watching film, so I knew all about him and knew he was going to be really good. And then when I found out he'd be playing attack with Rambo, I was like, this is going to be a tough unit to guard,
right?
And they definitely put that on display.
Talk about your defense, because your defense, I mean, I mean, you guys even talked about it on the broadcast. You guys just don't have a weakness. You might have the best goalie in the world. Your polls around him were unbelievable. I mean, talk about those guys.
Yeah, so I think, you know, people question Coach Daggs and Coach Murph's strategy about protecting the whole D, including the D middies. Myself and Kyle, I'm an honorary D member. I play defense sometimes in practice. And the best defense is when you don't have to play it by getting the ball. So I'll count myself in there. But, you know, those guys all bring something so unique to the table. Like, Matt Dunn is a true number one cover guy. Can cover anyone in the league, right? We had him on Brent Adams, who's arguably one of the fastest guys in the league, and he only went for one goal, and it was a backdoor quick stick. You know, Timmy Muller can guard guys one-on-one like he guarded Matt Kavanaugh, and then he could also shut down an inside guy like Miles Thompson. And then you got Bryce Young, who's probably the meanest defender in the league. And I think if you ask anybody, they hate going against him. And then we probably have, you know, our, like, undisputed best LSM in the world in Michael Earhart, who makes plays between the lines. He scores goals, causes turnovers. And I don't think any top midfielder, you even see, like, Tom Schreiber is 1-0 against him. Like, nobody likes dodging him.
Right.
So that makes, you know, the job of everyone else very, very not easy, but it makes it much easier. And then the D middies and Ty Warner and Jake Bernhardt, they're, you know, all world type defensive midfielders and super tough, hard nosed guys, battled through being banged up and played really well down the stretch. And then adding a young guy with great wheels and energy like TJ Camizio was also a big addition. But, like, you know, Brett Schmidt played valuable minutes as an older veteran. He did great. Isaac Paparo came in and played when we needed him and did a good job as well. So, like, from top to bottom, all those guys played awesome together, and huge credit to Coach Murphy for all his game plans and scouting he did. And then when you think about Kyle, you know, if it's not him or Blaze, I don't know who else is even in the conversation, but those two guys, hands down in my mind, are one and two.
Right.
And Kyle, you know, even from last year, he was 55%. I think he was, what, 63, 64% in cage.
Right.
And, you know, you look at people doubting the decision to protect all those guys in the beginning of the year. Well, guess what? We play that bad for three quarters with any other defense, we get smacked in that final game. They kept us in it all game against a great offense. Holding them to only six goals is pretty crazy.
Let's talk about some of the storylines. So early on, Matt Gaudette is mic'd up and he's chirping and guys don't like it and they go after him. I have to say, I thought he handled it pretty well after that. You know what I mean? He took his shots. He got up.
He did.
You know, he took it like a man and didn't ask, you know, no more mic the rest of the way. And I thought he kind of manned up pretty well. What was sort of your take on that whole thing? And then, you know, how that all unfolded?
You know, I think he got a bad rap for that. Like, everybody in the league talks trash, right? Whether it's on mic'd up or not. You know, if Matt Rambo's mic'd up the whole game, people probably don't think he says very nice things to defenders or even his teammates when he's pissed off, right? And so I think Gaudette did catch a little excess heat, but also, you know, and I'm friends with Blaze, so I'm feel for him. Like, the game's on national TV and you're mic'd up and the kids' parents are watching. Like, that's not necessarily that cool. You want to say anything you want after the game or kind of in quiet, totally fine, right? But I think, you know, the Chrome were already winning. There's no need to add insult to injury there. But I do think Gaudette's a good kid. And, you know, I'm close to Ty Warner and he speaks very highly of him. So I definitely take what he has to say pretty serious. So I think he did a great job of responding to it, not retaliating when guys went after him. But, you know, if it's me and it's our team playing the Chrome that next game, I don't know if our guys do the same thing the Redwoods did, right? Hmm. We respect the league and the game, but, you know, the Redwoods could have won that game had they not taken that unreleasable penalty, right? I think they gave up two or three goals and lose by one. So all those little plays and mistakes come back to haunt you later on. And, you know, if the Redwoods, say, win that game and they're the two or three seed, maybe they play us in the finals instead of the semis.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't think, unless he says something to Kyle Brunmore, I don't know if our team's getting that fired up.
Right. What about the Connor Fields situation? I thought that was fascinating. I mean, clearly, you know, they wanted to swing the ball around a little more. Maybe they felt like it was getting stuck in his stick a little too much. But, I mean, he's one of the greatest players in the world. And for him to not play the last three games, I just thought he's in the doghouse for a reason. Something's going on. Give me some insight on that deal.
Yeah, and I don't know too much about it aside from some whispers I've heard. I know Connor is a great player, and I'm sure he'll find a new home next year with a different team if it doesn't work out with him in the chaos. But I think, you know, maybe he didn't handle it his best when he had heard that he had got benched or wasn't going to be starting. And, you know, as a professional, it definitely eats at you when you feel like you have the capabilities to make it happen on the field. So I feel for him. But, you know, you look at our team and the reason we win is because everybody's team first. So my advice to anybody listening would be if you ever get put in a situation like that, and I have too, you know, I got traded from Boston because they drafted Trevor Baptiste and I had one bad game and they're like, all right, you're out of here. Like, you know, you got to take it and run. That's the nature of professional sports. You see it in other sports as well. And I think nobody's above the team and you just got to do whatever you can, even if it hurts in the short term. You're going to be better in the long term for taking the high road and doing what's right by your team.
So you're saying, I'm trying to read between the lines here, that after he was initially benched, that's when the drama really developed.
Yeah, and I don't know for certain, but that's what I would guess. Yeah, you know, like if they had said, hey, this is what's going down and he didn't handle it well, it could have been that. It also could have been like, all right, they're on a roll and maybe they just don't want to mess up the chemistry.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot we don't know. And I know Coach Towers didn't talk too much about it when asked. So there's really, you know, it's all he said, she said behind the scenes. So, you know, maybe they just felt like they were hot with what they were doing. And they were for a while until that late in that third quarter against us. So it's hard to question his decision.
What about the Atlas struggles? You know, Paul is so out there, right? You know, the co-founder of the league and, you know, he's so big on social media and everything. He puts himself out there and then, you know, kind of had a tough series. I thought he played well. I mean, he was beating guys, but he couldn't bury anything. But then he had a lot of big names. You had Pinnell there and other guys. And, you know, they really weren't able to come through. And so they've taken some heat fair? What's sort of your take on the Atlas and their struggles?
Yeah, I mean, I would say part of it's fair. You know, whenever you put yourself out there, whenever you have a team full of talent, you know, and you don't win, you're going to take some heat. I think every team that hasn't been successful is taking, like the Chrome probably are going to take heat for not winning that first game of the playoffs against the Chaos team. So I don't think anyone, you know, discriminates. It's pretty equal with who gets the wrath of, you know, not performing on game day. I do think they were better at a lot of times this year than they were last year, but I don't know what people's expectations necessarily were, right? We saw who they were last year. They weren't one of the best teams in the league. They were competitive in every game, you know, and I think until they kind of get that chemistry that some other teams have, and that's hard to find, right? Talent doesn't fix that. Coaching doesn't fix that. You got to just figure it out. And with, you know, such a limited time frame and not a full season, I would say, like, I would chalk most of their struggles up to just being in a condensed window with a lot of guys with talent and there only being one ball, you know?
What's next for the PLL? This was such a successful run, I thought. You know, Dane and I talked about it in the last episode. You know, you guys should do this next year. Like, even if you have a regular season, then maybe cap it off. You know, like in basketball, you have your regular season champs and then you have your tournament. You know, I mean, why not? It's great exposure.
Yeah, I think it'd be sweet, man. And, you know, I think great exposure, super condensed media-wise. I don't know the logistics behind it and what they would need to do to make, you know, make it more profitable. But say there is fans that are allowed to come to that, you know, I think we're almost selling out that small stadium, you know, 5,000-6,000 people, easy.
Yeah.
So I think depending on location, they could absolutely smash it. It'd be something, you know, definitely to look into, whether it be in the winter or whatever. But I think they could take that idea and really run with it. You know, even if they did a 5-week season and then a 3-week championship series with those seeds predetermined, it'd be pretty special.
Yeah, I think it would work. All right. So what's next for you?
What's next for me? You know, as of now, I'm taking a little bit of time off to enjoy this thing. I think it's sometimes you get lost in the shuffle. I'm studying for my real estate exam, as I told you.
Nice.
So hopefully branching out there. I'm going to continue to push the ball forward with Faceoff Factory. Hopefully return to more in-person coaching around the country, doing some events under COVID guidelines. Continuing to work on our video subscription platform to teach kids even remotely. And then, I think for me, just focusing on, you know, being my best in the indoor season coming up. We have some unfinished business with the Black Wolves. We felt like we were kind of cheated with the season being ended as us leading the league. And we're hungry to bring a title back to New England. So I'm fired up for that.
Yeah, well, I hope you guys get a chance to do that, because slowly but surely sports are coming back. We're seeing college football.
So that's right, man.
We're seeing college football kind of teeter on it, but it looks like the Big 12 is going to power through. It looks like the SEC is going to power through. If they can make it, then I think we can, that'd be a great sign. Listen.
Yeah, and I don't know why they couldn't, right? They all have the resources to be able to test every kid. If they want to be irresponsible and test positive because of decisions they make during the week, you don't travel, you don't play.
Right. Right. I guess
that'd be my suggestion.
Well, I guess they're also worried about the long-term stuff, but I think like the Big 12's putting in some things where if you have tested positive, they're going to do an EKG. They're going to do all that stuff. You know, like Jules, he had a little inflammation in his heart. And if you get that, you know, you should shut him down.
That's right.
Absolutely. Listen, Joe, it's been great having you on. It was awesome watching you over those 16 days. Congrats on the back-to-back. That's sweet. When do you get your ring?
We got it right before the first game last year, and I would imagine it'd be a similar timeline. You want to see it real quick?
Yeah. You got it?
Hang on. I'll bear it back.
Yeah. I want to see it. Hey, man, you win a championship, and someone's going to give you a championship ring. There's nothing like it. Hey, I've got
that's right, man. And I, you know, I messed up by getting mine sized a little bit incorrectly, so I'm going to have to get it resized. But for now, it looks really good. Really good in the case. But yeah, here we go.
All right. Now that's for the first championship, right?
That's for the first one.
Right. So when do you think they'll give you the second?
It'd be pretty nice having two.
Yeah. So how are you going to do it?
I think right before next season.
Right before next season?
I got a couple high school ones too, so I might just stock up one hand. With,
yeah, and then you do like a Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So we'll see.
All right.
We'll see, man.
Well, congratulations, buddy. That's Joe Nardell. I really appreciate your time. Good luck, and we'll get you on again sometime. Yeah. Hopefully when Coach can, his internet works. Thank you, buddy.
That's right. Returning guest. Anytime, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, buddy. That's Joe Nardella. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.